Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, we take a look into sexual slavery to which thousands of Nigerian women have become victims. One shares her story with DW.
She told me that I'm going there to look after her baby. She's married to an Italian man. So I was not happy when I later find out the truth from her.
The militant group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb claims responsibility for Sunday's attack on the Ivorian resort town Grand Bassam, which killed 22 people. We go to our correspondent in Abidjan.
There were warnings previously from various intelligence services that this might happen, and so yes, this may not be the end of it.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link on Monday, March the 14th. My name is Abubakar Jallo. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Fleeing poverty and end up in slavery. That's the predicament of most victims of human trafficking. Now in Nigeria, tens of thousands of people, especially women, are lured into sexual slavery after being smuggled to Europe. This report by Adrian Krish and Jan Philip Scholz is now presented by Ijeoma Okere.
Benin City is a hotbed for human traffickers. Most of the victims are young girls who are lured with promises of getting a better life in Europe. For many of them, this is where the odyssey to Europe begins. This is where the traffickers first make contact with them. Our reporters arranged to meet with one of the victims at a hotel. She prefers to call herself Joy. At 17 years, an acquaintance convinced Joy to go to Italy. Only then did Joy realize the acquaintance was a brutal pimp.
She told me that I'm going there to look after her baby. She's married to an Italian man. So I was not happy when I later find out the truth from her. I decided to do it because I don't have a choice. She threatened me with that she will kill me.
It's the lack of perspective in Benin City that drives so many young women into the hands of human traffickers. And that's not going to change anytime soon, Joy says, if so many perpetrators go unpunished.
So I want them to brought to justice for Italian government, Nigeria, whatever, to make sure that they stop these things. It's not only my madam. There is a lot of madam that's even wicked than my madam.
Sister Bibiana, a Catholic nun and anti-human traffic activist, has been fighting against human trafficking for years and explains the dangers to young Nigerian women. She's also had many experiences with the authorities and is getting more and more frustrated.
They are not doing their work well. They are now living in their past glory. They are no longer as active as when they started.
For Joy is also disillusioned with the state. After 5 years of forced prostitution, she was deported by Italian authorities. Now she has a little shop in Benin City. She's finally starting to feel strong enough to bring her trafficker to justice. Joy says there are still so many women being held captive there.
That report was written by Adrian Krish and Jan Philip Scholz. So what was it like following the ordeal of these human smugglers? Jan Philip Scholz has been speaking to my colleague Crispin Mwakidiu.
Of course, it was a big adventure because we didn't only shoot the documentary in Nigeria, but we really followed the trail of the traffickers all the way from Nigeria through the desert, all the way to Europe, to the streets of Italy, where a lot of those trafficked girls end up in prostitution. So it was very exciting, but of course also demanding at the same time, because we also saw a lot of suffering and a lot of cruelties on the side of the perpetrators.
What did you learn from interacting with some of the victims of human trafficking?
I learned that most of the victims really had to go through hell because they really were under full control of the traffickers when they were trafficked to Europe and even when they were in Europe. And the ones that talked to us, they had to be very brave because, like I said, those madams, they are the pimps that are usually on at the top of the gangs of traffickers. They really keep 100% control of their victims. And The traditional magical practice of juju is also very important in this context. It's a very common religious practice in southern Nigeria, especially in Edo State, where most of the victims come from. So the traffickers, they take the victims to so-called juju shrines, where they have to take an oath that they will never tell anyone about what's happening to them. And those spells are very strong. So the victims are really afraid to talk to anyone, even if they are really exploited and abused to the worst degree.
How widespread is the problem of human trafficking in Nigeria or in Africa as a whole?
I think it is really much more widespread than we might think. There are thousands and thousands of victims every year. And of course, it's not only the trafficking between Nigeria and Italy or between Nigeria and Europe, but it's also trafficking within different countries in Africa. And I think the problem has to do a lot with the lack of prospects of many people in the region. And of course, the traffickers use this desolation and the despair of the people, and they promise them a better life somewhere else. And as long as those levels of despair and social injustice exist, of course, it's very easy for the traffickers to find new victims.
Jan Philip Scholz in Lagos.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The militant group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has claimed responsibility for Sunday's attack in the resort town of Grand Bassam, Ivory Coast. At least 22 people were killed, four of them Westerners, including a German and a French citizen. Ivory Coast says it neutralized the six gunmen who opened fire at the tourists, but their identities have not yet been confirmed. Let's go now to our correspondent Bram Postumus, currently in downtown Abidjan. Bram, Grand Bassam is far away from Abidjan, but how much has this attack changed the mood in the commercial capital?
Yes, it's obviously reeling. It's under shock. People didn't expect this to happen, although there were warnings previously. But the city is still very much, you know, going about its business, but in a subdued way.
The Islamic group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has claimed responsibility for these attacks. Should people be worried that such attacks will be coming in the future?
Yes, indeed, I should be worried. And Mali was attacked from Cote d'Ivoire last week. That attack was repulsed. There were warnings previously from various intelligence services that this might happen. And so, yes, this may not be the end of it.
So how has the government responded to this?
Well, very swiftly, they sent an enormous number of security forces on their way, and then they sealed off the part of Grand Bassam where this was happening, and they've already announced that security will be beefed up throughout the country.
What more can you tell us about the victims of this attack?
Very difficult to say in particular terms, but in general terms, I mean, these were holiday makers. These were people who were just leaving Abidjan for the weekend, going to have a day on the beach, both Ivorians and indeed foreigners. The majority of the people dead are Ivorians, and the majority of the people fleeing from the mayhem on the beach were actually just teenagers having a good day on the beach and trying to get away from the shooting.
Can you tell me, like, the amount of foreigners, Western foreigners, you have currently in the country? I mean, roughly.
Oh, roughly. They run in the thousands, and they're not only from the sort of traditional sources where you would expect them, like France. To follow up on this, there is obviously a risk now that this attack has taken place that people will become more wary of coming into Cote d'Ivoire.
How secured are these tourist destinations?
Not at all. Grand Bassam is open, Abidjan is open. It's a big megalopolis of 7 million people. There are hardly any security measures in place. There were a few in the big shopping malls where you had to have your baggage checked and all the rest of it. This is obviously set to change, but the level of protection previously available in places like Grand Bassam and indeed the economic capital Abidjan were very, very feeble.
Thank you, Bram Postumus in Abidjan. A major social and economic initiative known as the Socio-Economic Future of South Africa, or SEFSA, has been launched in Johannesburg. Its aim is to seek solutions to the problems facing South Africa today. The latest initiative comes in the wake of the violent and volatile student protests in universities, demands for improved service delivery all over the country, and the burning of factories and other businesses in KwaZulu-Natal. Subri Govinda has the story.
The New Socio-Economic Future of South Africa, or SEFSA, has been described as a platform for all South Africans to discuss what is seen as the urgent task of rebuilding the country, recovering its vision, and renewing the society. Lack of leadership, difficult economic times, rising socio-economic injustices, runaway corruption, and violent crime are some of the stumbling blocks that were highlighted. While acknowledging that a great deal had been achieved since the dawn of democracy in 1994, Archbishop Thabo Makgoba, who heads the initiative, said at the end of the conference that there's an urgent and honest need for a national conversation around the country to avert what he termed a meltdown.
My understanding of where the country is at the moment, you know, is a wealth of emotions. Firstly, I think we are in a moral quandary and a moral dilemma. We have plenty that God has endowed this country with, but many can't share in the dividends of that plenty. We need a strong moral voice that can say to all South Africans, including our leaders, we need to recalibrate our moral compasses.
Zwelinzima Vavi, who is part of the National Movement Against Corruption, said South Africans, by and large, had underestimated the power of patronage that has become part and parcel of South African life.
Patronage makes the clever man stupid. Not the fear of losing the ability to pay that rover is what have driven South Africa to where it is now, almost to its knees at the economic and political level. And yet the people who know the difference between right and wrong are there.
Faith-based organizations played a crucial role of fighting for justice during the days of apartheid. Professor Nick Binadel, who is one of the initiators of the new socio-economic group, says he is confident that once again these groups will be able to rebuild hope and confidence among South Africans. This, he adds, is necessary to recover the country's vision and create a growing economy and to build a united, prosperous and healed South Africa.
We now find ourselves under a challenge about these things. And I think, like many people, governance and values are central. And I believe that, I think, as do most South Africans. We can choose how to conduct yourself. And the faith-based community is that community that can bring it together.
Archbishop Makgoba and his group of social activists will travel around the country to listen and gather the thoughts of the people. They say they have realized that the government alone cannot overcome the social and economic inequalities and injustices facing a large percentage of the people. But at the same time, they insist that there must be social and moral rejuvenation among the people, especially leaders in government and business.
Subri Govinda reporting. Next on the lineup, Learning by Ear.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Crime Fighters, Land of Chongwe. This is the fourth episode, Blackmail and Betrayal. Last time, the residents of Chongwe demonstrated when they heard the news of Chief Awombo's death. Mweri, a private investigator, and the head of an NGO that fights land grabbing, announced that she intends to start an investigation into how the chief died. He was a respected but controversial figure who spoke out against the land deal in favor of the flower company Roses International. Meanwhile, the country's intelligence chief, Zamba Wazamba, lashed out at Inspector Wamto for failing to turn up any clues about the chief's death. Zamba's cousin, Interior Minister Kuzacha, is also concerned about how the case is developing. Let's pick up the story with Pambo and Zmari, the two flower farm workers from Chongwe, paying a visit to Mweri at her office.
Pambo, Zumari, please have a cup of tea and then tell me, what was so urgent that you've been waiting for me outside my office since 6 a.m.?
Hey. This tea is hot.
Sorry.
Just burnt my tongue. Pambo, you tell her why we are here.
Well, it's about our chief.
Chief Awombo? Do you know anything about his death or disappearance?
We found his body.
What? The two of you found the chief's body?
Yes. We were beside the river, taking a break from work at the Rose Farm. And suddenly we saw a body floating towards us on the water.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. The two of you were the first to know that Chief Awombo was dead?
Yes. No. We didn't know whether he was dead or alive when he pulled him out of the river.
Did you share this information with the police?
Well, that's where it gets interesting.
Of course you did. They were offering a reward of 1 million for anyone with information that might help locate the chief. I need to hear every detail of what happened. It could prove useful to my investigation.
In that case, please, may I have some more of your tea?
So, where were we? Oh, yeah, beside the river.
Who could that be? I wasn't expecting any guest apart from you.
Open the door, Mary. We know you have two suspects in there. Open this door before we break it down.
Oh, no. I don't want to go to jail. Mary, please do something.
No.
I can't go to jail. I have young children.
We'll count to three. One.
What do we do? Should we hide?
Relax, you two. Let me handle this. I'll open the door.
Two. Three.
Inspector Mwamto, what an unpleasant surprise.
Out of the way, Mary.
Hey.
It took me a while, but finally I found you two sneaky flower pickers. So, which of you called me the other day to say you'd seen the body of Chief Awombo?
Guys, you don't have to answer that question.
Don't listen to her. I'm a police officer, and you're required to help me with this investigation. I'll ask you again. Which of you is Pambo?
Inspector, I think we both know that information can only be shared voluntarily. These two do not wish to do that at this point.
Fair enough. In that case, they're both suspects in the murder of Chief Awombo. Huh? And I'm taking them with me for questioning.
What?
Wow. Nice swing and nice shot, Gamble. You should seriously consider playing golf professionally.
Maybe I will one day, Kuzacha. In the meantime, you should seriously consider what you're doing to my business.
Your business? What's that supposed to mean? Are you forgetting that I have a stake in Rose International? In case you've forgotten, I own 25% of the company, Gamble.
Fair enough. I'll rephrase that statement. Maybe you should consider what you're doing to our business.
You think I haven't?
How should I know, huh? All I know is that the flower farm has had to shut down because of the ongoing investigation into the chief's death. We've incurred losses of millions of euros, and the figure keeps on rising. The flowers are all rotting in the fields and going to waste.
It's not my fault the farm is closed. It's a crime scene. Actually, you should be glad that the chief is dead and the farm is still intact. It's like we've killed two birds with one stone.
Minister Kuzacha, how dare you try and insinuate that I'm happy the chief is no longer alive? We may have had our differences, but I certainly didn't want him to die.
Whatever you say, Gamble. But however much Chief Awombo was loved and respected as a national figure, for us he was a headache. So we can both thank our lucky stars that he's dead. After a while, this will die down and we can go back to business as usual.
No, Kuzacha. It cannot be business as usual. I'm an investor, and when I invest my money somewhere, I expect it to earn maximum profits. The discovery of the chief's body on the Rose Farm has done irrevocable damage to the company's reputation.
Really? Irrevocable? What do you mean?
Our clients want assurances that the flowers we export have been cultivated and harvested in accordance with human rights, and that the people who work there receive fair pay. Now, a respected chief who opposed the Roses International land deal in Jongwe has been found dead on the Roses International farm. How do you think that makes us look?
Innocent until proven guilty. Isn't that what you Westerners believe? Listen, my government evicted thousands of people in Chongwe so you could have that farm to plant roses. We then made sure that most of the people displaced were given jobs at the farm. Isn't that respecting human rights? Isn't that being fair to all?
You never warned me that the land of Chongwe was so controversial. You never told me that Chief Owambo himself illegally acquired a large piece of land after independence, forcing several families to squeeze into a much smaller area.
Who told you this, Gamble?
The chief himself.
Chief Owambo told you? When?
The night before he went missing. He came to see me at the farm and threatened to invade it with his people.
My God! Did anyone see him visit you there?
I don't know. It was late and most of the workers had gone home. Why do you ask?
Because we aren't the only ones with a grudge against the chief.
Inspector?
I swear it wasn't me, Inspector. I didn't see anything, I didn't hear anything, and I don't know anything. Please, don't lock me up.
Zumari, will you just shut up and act like a man? Mori says he's going to find us a lawyer and we don't have to worry about a thing.
We'll see about that. You two will stay locked in here until you decide to tell me what happened.
All right. If I tell you what I know, will you release me right away?
You have my word.
Pambo, what I'm about to do will help us both. Okay.
Zumari, no, stop. Don't tell them anything yet.
Inspector, Bambo is the one who made the phone call to you. He is the one who found the body of the chief. He knows everything. I'm just his workmate.
Zumari, I must be dreaming. How can you betray me like this?
And there we end the fourth episode of our serial, Land of Chongwe. Some interesting information has come to light. Chief Owambo didn't oppose the land deal with Roses International only on behalf of the people of Chongwe, but because before it was given to the company, the land belonged to him. Don't miss the next episode. You can always listen to this episode or previous ones again by visiting our page at dw.com/crimefighters. We're also on Facebook. Until next time, bye-bye.
Hope you enjoyed that episode of Crime Fighters, a Learning by Ear production. And before we leave you, a quick summary of the main stories. A Nigerian victim of human trafficking has been telling DW that many others are still trapped in Europe. The militant group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has claimed responsibility for Sunday's attack on the resort town of Grand Bassam, Ivory Coast, which killed at least 22 people. And a project called the Socio-Economic Future of South Africa has been launched to tackle the current problems facing the country. There, we come to the end of this broadcast. You can always contact us by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or you can send us a short an SMS to +491609575950. That's +491609575950. And my name is Abubakar Jallo, wishing you a pleasant start of the week. Bye now.